earlier this year, I had a friend who completed her first marathon. For a marathon, if you're unfamiliar with that, it means that she ran 26.2 miles nonstop at one time. And to me, that seems a long way. But to her, it seemed a long way too, but she trained for it. And she kind of kept a blog going and kept us informed on how her training was going and all that was going on. And for marathon training, for the non-professionals like probably all of us in this room, you don't actually run a full marathon until you do the marathon. The most that she had run up until that point at one time was around 21 miles, which means she had a little over 5 miles at the end of the race that she had never run before. And this particular course was quite hilly. There was a big hill at mile 24 or so. And she commented again and again that in her preparation for this and everything that she read and everything that she studied, books about running marathon, articles about running marathons, that all of the coaches said, trust your training. When you get to the end, when your body hurts, when you just want to stop, when you feel like you cannot go any further, trust your training. If you train right, not just the running, but your nutrition and all of those things, if you do this right, you'll make it. We promise. You have to trust in this. And so she writes this blog after she finishes the marathon and she gets the t-shirt and she gets the medal. And she said, I got to mile 24 and I just wanted to lay down and go to sleep. I was in so much pain. I was so tired. And I turned the corner and there in front of me was this massive hill. And she thought, I can't do this. But she said, over and over again in my head, I kept saying the words, trust your training, you can do this. Trust your training, you can do this. And she actually ended up doing it. I tell you that story because sometimes in my life and maybe in your life, as you try to live as a follower of Jesus, maybe you've come to a time where you've turned the corner and you looked in front of you and you saw a spiritual hill and you just went, I just can't do this anymore. How can I go on? This seems like it's taking forever. How do I keep going? What moves me forward? And the psalmist is going to answer that for us this morning in this psalm. He's going to answer that for us by saying to us, trust not in your training, but trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord. And we're going to look at that this morning here in this psalm. Just if you haven't been with us for a couple of weeks, just kind of where we are in our study, we're looking at Psalm 113 to Psalm 118, because these are the psalms that Jesus would have sung at the Passover meal. And this psalm in particular would have been the last song of a series. They would have sung 113, 14, and now 15 together before they have the kind of the final cup, the final bread that goes around. Then they'll sing a few more songs, 16, 17, and 18, and then Jesus will depart and he will go out into the garden and he will pray and we'll hear what that prayer was about in a little while. But in this series, just kind of thinking through big picture of these psalms, 113 we looked at describes who God is, that God is glorified, God is exalted, he is, behold our God, he is who he is. And then in 114 we looked at last week of the nation of Israel, of who God has made the people to be, that he is there in there's God's sanctuary, Israel has dominion. Tremble, O earth, at the presence of the Lord, at what God has done for his people, that he has brought them out of slavery, out of bondage in Egypt, and he has brought them into the promised land. And so we kind of think, if you look big picture at these, there is the overwhelming power of God. There is God's people. And now as God's people that we're in the promised land, we're living and we're going, this is harder than we thought. How do we keep going? How do we keep doing this? And it's normal for us because our lives as believers is not a sprint. It's not a 100-meter dash. It's a marathon or longer. And so how do we keep going? We trust in the Lord. We trust in the Lord. I think this passage shows us, it's a Presbyterian passage, so it has three reasons. So, that was a joke. Anyway, we trust in the Lord. One, because he's real and he's active. Look back at the passage with me. Verse 2. Why do the nations say, where is their God? Our God is in heaven. He does whatever pleases him. And then he is going to go into this description of idols. Here is God. He's in heaven. He does, I think this is important, he does whatever pleases him. It means he's active, he can move, he can speak, he can do things. And then he says, but their idols are silver and gold made by the hands of men. They have mouths but can't speak, eyes but can't see, ears but can't hear, noses they can't smell, hands they can't feel, feet but they can't walk, nor can they utter a sound with their throats. Do you hear as he describes these idols, their incompleteness, their inability to do anything? And yet, we often put our trust in those things. That's what the people around them were doing. That's why it says in verse 2, why do the nations say, where is their God? Because they are walking around and they have these little statues. Sometimes they're little cows. Sometimes they were little people. Sometimes they were other things that they had made with their hands. Idols were things they could manipulate, but they were things that they worshiped. And so the nations are going, hey, where's yours? Where's your idol? Where's the thing that you put your trust in? And their answer to that is, we put our trust and our hope in a God who is in heaven, a God who can do whatever he wants. And oftentimes we need to be reminded of who God is, that God really is active. He really is living. He really is seated on his throne. He really is real, unlike the idols that we have in our lives. Because as the theologian John Calvin once said, our hearts are idol factories. We're always making idols. And in our day and age, maybe we don't make little cows that we walk into our room and bow down to them, or little men and rub their heads as we walk into our home. We might not have those things in our homes, but in our hearts, many, maybe most of us, we have idols. We have things that we run to when life gets hard. We have things that we cling to, that we want to have control over. And sometimes the things that are idols are, like I said, they're not things that we physically make, but we can turn anything into an idol. An idol is anything that you trust or worship ahead of God. And we can make things that are good idols. We can make things that are neutral idols. We can make things that are bad idols. We can make idols out of a spouse. We can make idols out of finding a spouse. We can make idols out of children. We can make idols out of our children, having children. We can make idols out of our work. We can make idols out of our homes, out of what we drive, out of, you get the point. None of those things that I just said are bad. In fact, all of those things are good. But when those good things become ultimate things, things that we worship, things that we put our trust in, then those become the the idols in our lives, the things that we run to first when we wonder what is going on, rather than God. Those things aren't bad. Please don't go from here and tell your kids that we're, what did the pastor say about trusting? Oh, he said that you're bad. No, not at all. Those are good things. They're just not ultimate things. We can make idols out of so many things, things that are neutral, things that are bad, bad for us can become our idols. Usually those are the ones that we see the most, where we don't see the ones in our own lives. I know there's an idol, but well, one, just a diagnostic question first. How do I know it's an idol in my life? One, if something threatens it, and you get defensive, then maybe it's an idol. It's just a diagnostic question. It's not cut and dry. It's not 100%. What do you, another question could be, what do you spend your time daydreaming about? What do you put your talent, your time, and your treasure into? Is it God? Or is it other things? Is it God first? Or is it something else first, and maybe God second, third, fourth, if I have time or if I feel like it or get around to it? Those are just diagnostic questions that you can use to think about, maybe what are some of the idols in my life? One of the big idols where I come from and where I think where we are now is football. Football, American style, and football. Because you use your foot, and I don't know why we... Anyway, you'll see on any given Saturday in the fall in the United States, and on Saturdays, some Sundays, and the occasional Monday night here in the Premier League, which I tend to follow a lot because I really enjoy watching it, you see just great houses of worship. 60,000 people standing around with their arms raised up, singing a song, all wearing the same kit that costs like 100 quid. Goodness gracious, I looked into getting one. They're expensive. What do you put your time, your talent, your treasure? What do you worship? In America, on Facebook on Sunday mornings, for me, seeing people back in the U.S., friends, they spent their whole day yesterday from sun up to way past sundown in a car park before a football game that they spent hundreds of dollars to go see and only watched half of it because they were out in the car park with a grill cooking food and spending the whole day there. And I think, you won't be at church tomorrow because you're too tired from this. Where's your idol? Look, please don't hear me say that football is bad. It's not. It's one of those neutral things. I love watching it. I enjoy it maybe more than the next guy. Can it be an idol of mine? Yes, it could. How do we know it's an idol when it's threatened? You'll see at the end of the year, when if your team is getting ready to be relegated, the despair on people's faces is amazing. Like, how is your Monday going to be any different than today because of what is happening? It won't. You still have the same things in your life that are going on. It doesn't matter what happened to Fulham. I don't know if anybody's a Fulham fan. My apologies if I just crushed you, but you're at the bottom of the league right now. But do you hear what I'm saying? Is it threatened? And you go, oh, me. There's nothing wrong with watching football. There's nothing wrong with enjoying it. But it can become an idol. And you could, I just pick on football because it's probably the closest to my heart of being an idol. It can be any number of things for any of us. You just think about what might it be? What am I putting my hope and my trust in? The psalmist comes in and says, trust in the Lord because he is real. He is active. He is moving. None of those things were designed to do what God has created us for and who God is. Here's another way of saying that, that God is ultimate, that God is the only one who can heal us, who can cure us. He is the only one that we can fully and completely trust. Even when you saw Caitlin up here, and it took us took a while for us to get her up here. And she's like, why don't you want to do it? Because I don't trust you. Maybe I've done that to her before and she's fallen. And you think, oh, you're going to do that to me again, or you're going to embarrass me in front of all of the people in the church, or you're going to do this or that, or maybe it's, I don't think you're strong enough. I don't think you're strong enough to catch me. Sometimes we can feel that way with God. God, I don't know if you're strong enough to catch me. But I look at this idol over here, and it's something that I can control, something that I can manipulate, something that is, it's actually worthless. And I'll trust it. God says, I'm big enough. I'm big enough for you that I will catch you. You can trust me because I'm real and because I'm active. Secondly, we can trust God not just because he's real, but because he is our help and our shield. The psalmist continues in verses 9 through 11, and it's kind of a change in the format of this psalm. And this psalm is, some theologians think it's just kind of a conglomeration of a bunch of different sayings because it kind of changes its tone. And by that I mean this, that it would have been normal if they were doing this psalm for, at this point, the priest, as they were singing it, that he would sing, O house of Israel, trust in the Lord. And then the people would all respond, he is their help and shield. And then the priest would say, O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord. And then the people would respond, he is their help and shield. And then he would say, you who fear him, trust in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. So it's repeated three times, and there's this progression that happens here of, O house of Israel, meaning the whole nation, everybody, this country, trust in the Lord. And they answer the question, why? Because he is their help and their shield. And then he says, oh, house of Aaron, that's the priest, that's the leadership of the country. Trust in the Lord. Why? Because he is their help and their shield. You who fear him, that's us. As verse 13 is going to say, small and great alike. There's this progression kind of down the ladder, if you will, where he says, you who trust in the Lord because he is their help and their shield. So what does it mean that he's our help and our shield? The word help there can also, maybe some of your versions that you might have there, can be translated, or the idea behind the word is to bring them out of the slavery. He's their salvation. He is our salvation and our shield. He's the one who cares for us. And the shield there is an idea of protector. Why can we trust God? Trust in the Lord. Why? Because he's the one who saved us, brought us to himself, and he is the one who protects us from all things. He is our shield. Jesus is the one. God will not let anything come into our lives that he has not already ordained for it to happen. And that's hard for me to say because it's really hard at times to believe that, isn't it? When we go through some kind of difficult time in life, whether it be a break of a relationship through death, whether it be a break of relationship just through the brokenness of people, whether it be a illness, cancer, disease, loss of a job, loss of a home, we wonder, how is it that God could protect us? How did God allow this to happen? Some friends of ours who they live in St. Andrews now, where he's doing some PhD studies, their home, their church is in Paradise, California. If you've seen the news, it hasn't been too much on here, but there was an enormous wildfire that happened in Paradise. And they lost everything that they left in the U.S. And I read yesterday, an email came out or the other day, that everyone in the church lost their home. And there, I don't know how big the church is. My guess is it's maybe twice the size of our church here. Could you imagine if every one of us lost everything that we owned in a matter of minutes? The fire was traveling a football pitch 100 yards a second. If every one of us lost our home, God is our help and our shield. How could God allow this to happen? I confess to you, I've done this for a long time, and that's the one question that I don't like, because I don't have an answer to it. I don't have an answer for you. Jeremy said last week, as I was honored to be installed here as an elder, we're going to live life together. It's one of the privileges that we have. We're going to live life together. We're going to go through good times. We're going to go through hard times together. And we look forward to that. But there's going to be times where you say, why did this happen? And my only answer is, I don't know. I don't know. But even in those times, I know this, that we can trust the Lord because of who He is. Because if He did not spare His own Son, He is our help. He is our salvation. If He did not spare His own Son, how will He not also give us all things? And so God will not allow anything into our lives that won't make us more and more like Jesus. And I don't understand that, but I know the one who is doing that. And it is Him that we are called to trust. In good times and in times where life is difficult, because He is alive. He is seated in heaven and He does whatever pleases Him. He is active, He is moving, and He is moving in us. And I confess that there's times where, one, in my own life, I see this happening and I wonder, God, what are you doing? Why did you do this? Why did you allow this to happen? Why in the world did you call someone who really likes sunshine and gets kind of sad when it gets dark to a place where it gets dark now before 4 p.m? That's not a complaint. It's just a fact. Why did you do that? So that He might make me more like Jesus. And I don't know why or how, but maybe in 10, 15, 20, 30 years, if I last that long, I'll be able to know why, or maybe I won't know why until God calls me home. And that's true of all of us, that God is doing a work in us. Do you trust Him? Because He is our help and our shield. I don't know all of you. And I definitely don't know what's happening in your life. We've only been here a short time. But I do know that God is the one you can trust. Wherever you are, whatever God has going on in your life right now, it's for His glory. And I don't always know the answer to that, but I know the one we can trust. Lastly, why is it that we can trust? Because He's active, He's alive, because He's our help and our shield, and because He has blessed us. And He has given to us His covenant promise. If you look at verse 12, the psalmist goes on, the Lord remembers us and will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, small and great alike. May the Lord make you increase, both you and your children. May you be blessed by the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. In this section, we see and we hear and are reminded of God's covenant promise to his people. If you're a student of the Bible, you may have heard as I read those words, or as Allie read them, or as we're going to sing them here in a few minutes, the promise to Abraham, the father of this nation that God calls in Genesis chapter 12. What does he say to him? I'm going to make you a great nation. And Abraham and his wife are beyond childbearing years, and they're childless. And he's like, make me a great nation. And they laugh at him. Yeah, right, sure, got it. And then years go by, and God says the promise again that I will bless you, I will make you a great nation. We see in this that God keeps his promises. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless those who fear the Lord, small and great alike. We can trust in the Lord because he has blessed us, because he has given to us Jesus. To the small and to great alike, the gospel goes forth. The gospel goes out, and it's not just for one nation. It's for all nations. It's not just for great or small, it's for all of us, because God remembers his promise that he will bless us, and he has blessed us. He has blessed us in Christ. He has blessed us in the gospel. And so we can rest and trust because God is utterly faithful. He will not forget his promises to us. One of the things that we have been saying and thinking about as we've looked through these psalms is, as Jesus sang them, what might they have meant to him? What might, as these words were going out around the table, how would Jesus have heard them? Think of what Jesus is getting ready to go through. He is literally hours away from going to the cross. He's having this last meal with his disciples. And Jesus sings this psalm. He's going to sing all of these, but what might this one have said? We know Jesus' mindset because, as I said earlier, he's getting ready to go into a garden and he's going to pray, and he brings some of the disciples along and he says, pray with me. And what do? Fall asleep. It's kind of late. They're tired. They had a big meal. They had a bunch of wine. They're just... They fall asleep. Jesus goes over by himself, and the picture the scriptures teaches is that he falls on the ground. And do you remember what he says? God, if there is any way, let this cup pass from me. If there is any way that I cannot go to the cross, I don't want to die. I don't want to be separated from you. If there's anything, but not my will, but yours be done. Not to us, O Lord, not to us, but to your name be the glory because of your love and your faithfulness. As the Son is getting ready to go to the cross and the Father is getting ready to take all of the wrath that was due to me and to you, the punishment of God was getting ready to be placed on Jesus. Jesus knows that that is coming. And he says, God, if there's another way, then please let that be. But not my will. I have to think, and we don't know this. This is complete conjecture on my part. But these words would have been rolling around in Jesus' head. Not to us. Not to us. God, I'm getting ready to do this. Not to me, but to you give glory. I can trust you. I can trust you because you are my Father who is active in heaven. I can trust you because you are my help and my shield. There is nothing that you will allow, even death on the cross, that will separate me from you. will be separated for a little while, but then I will be in your presence and I will sit at your right hand forever and ever. And Jesus, I think, would have been greatly comforted by these words. Trust in who God is. Trust in the covenant promise that is getting ready to be fulfilled in what Jesus does here on the cross. They are words of hope to Jesus as he gets ready to face his own death, but also his resurrection for the glory of God, that he would be exalted and glorified. And I think they're words for us. Because of who Jesus is, because of what he has done, if we hope and our faith is in him, our trust is in him, then we can face whatever hill we look at tomorrow that maybe even today you're dreading. Oh no, there's no way that, God, why are you doing this? Where are you? Trust in the Lord. Trust in the Lord, for he is our help and our shield. Idols cannot care for us, though we quickly want to cling to them. We're called to do away with them and trust more and more. May that be true of us as his church. Let me pray for us.